Wisp Sports Radio, the voice of women in sport.
Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is Season 2, Episode 4. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with Wisp Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center. In this podcast, I'll be talking to Matea Wasen, my former master's student and Tucker Center research assistant. She's a former collegiate athlete, an off and on soccer coach over the last couple years, and as of this week, and relevant to this podcast, an award-winning scholar, which we'll talk more about later. Welcome, Matea.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's really fun to be able to talk to you about the paper, which just won the award for the student paper, the Aaron Reifstock Award in the Women's Journal of Physical Activity and Sport, the inaugural winner for your paper that's based on your master's thesis, which is what we're going to talk about this morning. So before we start, why don't you just give us a little background about, you know, your pathway to where you are now, and then we'll dig into more about your paper.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I grew up playing soccer, and that was my main sport. And it led me to McAllister College, which is where I did my undergrad. And I played soccer there while doing an English major. And after I graduated, I was coaching for 4 or 5 years before I found the Tucker Center. And I went back to grad school to pursue a master's in sports sociology under Dr. Nicole Lavoie. You were my advisor. And that's where I became interested in research on women in coaching.
Right. Yeah. And I should also mention, we have a summer fellowship called the Pam Borton Endowment for Women in Leadership. And you were with us for 2 summers as a Borton Fellow as well, where we got to do a lot of writing, report writing, the Developing Physically Active Girls Report, a couple Women in College Coaching report cards, some book chapters, and then worked on getting your master's thesis into publication, which is a challenge. not because it was not publishable, but because it's always a challenge to publish anything. So getting a master's thesis published and having it win an award is a real accomplishment, and a kudos to your idea. So why don't you tell us what your idea was for your master's thesis?
Yeah, I wanted to look at whether women who were coached by women as athletes were more likely to become coaches themselves after they ended their playing careers. And I came to this question because as a soccer coach, especially after college, when I was coaching pretty consistently, I was looking around and really not seeing a lot of other female coaches. And then when I got involved with the Tucker Center, I would often hear this idea in advocacy for female coaches that if you can see her, you can be her. Or if female athletes are seeing women in positions of leadership in sport, that they're more likely to be able to picture themselves in those positions. But it kind of occurred to me to dig a little deeper into research that had been done on that question. And when I looked, I found that there had been some really important studies back in the 90s, but they were very qualitative in nature. And no one had ever really looked at whether female athletes who were coached by women were more likely to actually enter coaching rather than to just say they were interested in coaching or had high self-efficacy toward coaching.
So if I remember correctly, the literature, and especially the study by Everhart and Kelleher-Eye in the mid-90s, measured high school female basketball players' intentions to coach. And they never really measured if they actually coached, but then this study just gets cited nonstop, by myself included, to say that women and girls coached by women are more likely to go into coaching. So your study really sort of took a different approach than that, right?
Yeah, that's really what kind of led me to my idea is looking at their study and a few others that only measured interest in coaching, aspirations to coach, self-efficacy toward coaching. And while those are really important to measure, we didn't actually know looking at that whether those athletes who might say they're more interested in coaching, whether they're more likely to become coaches in the real world. So that's where my study came in. I wanted to look at kind of real world behavior.
Because we know that same sex, same identity role models matter. I mean, that's pretty clear in the literature for emulation and valuation and self-efficacy and self-perceptions. And as you mentioned, if you can see her, you can be her. It also leads to better visibility, so girls can see women in visible positions of power as role models, but we really didn't have recent data to support this idea that women coached by women were more likely to go into coaching. And given that so many people are interested in increasing the number of women in coaching, it was really important that we sort of had some updated data on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the research that we have and that we draw on looks at women who are already coaches. And that was another area where I just saw an opportunity to jump in with some similar methodology, but actually looking at student athletes or women who are just on the verge of entering the coaching profession, because that's the, you know, the pool of female athletes is the pool of future coaches.
Right. And so tell us what you actually did. So you didn't measure intentions to coach and you didn't measure that I'd like to coach. You actually measured who went into coaching. So tell us how you did that, because it was really a clever way of getting new data.
Yeah, what I did was I was basically an internet sleuth for a few months. I took this pool of, I narrowed it down to Division I collegiate basketball players. And so I looked at this pool of women for a certain range of years. And I, first of all, tracked whether they were coached by a male head coach, a female head coach, or some of them were coached by more than one coach while they were in college. And then I tried to find as much data as I could about their career path after college. So I tracked whether they entered collegiate coaching or became high school coaches. I tracked their career changes. And then I had a really pretty robust pool of data on a group of around 200 female athletes.
And what you did is you looked at basketball rosters over 4 years. So the criteria, I think this is important because the design was pretty robust, is that they had to have played all 4 years and they couldn't have transferred in. And they, if they had more than one coach, because that was one of the sort of unintended findings of the study, was that a lot of these female student athletes had multiple coaches over their 4 years. But that if they had multiple coaches, they had to be both men or both women. Is that right, if I'm remembering that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. Because I wanted to be able to kind of compare apples to apples and not be looking at some athletes who had only played for a year at a certain school under a certain coach. So I did narrow it down that way, but still ended up with a good pool of athletes who had either been coached by a woman for all 4 years or a man for all 4 years.
Okay. So $1 million question then, what did you find?
So what I found was pretty interesting. I did not find that female athletes who are coached by women were more likely to become coaches. And that did surprise me a little bit. But what I did find was that of those athletes who did enter coaching, the ones who had been coached by women in college were more likely to persist in coaching. So they were more likely to coach for longer.
Yeah, that was really, nobody had ever had that finding before. So your first finding kind of was contrary to this really popular study that is very often cited, that women coached by women are more likely to go into coaching, which you didn't find, but that they're still in coaching. So I think that's interesting. So how did you make sense of that? What was the why there? Why did you think that might be the case? How could we explain it?
Yeah. So for the first question, whether women who are coached by women are more likely to enter coaching, I think there could be a lot of reasons why the findings of previous studies were not replicated in this study. And one of them may be that, an interest in coaching or high self-efficacy toward coaching just might not translate to, real world actual entry into coaching, because I think there's a lot of other factors that go into a decision to, pursue a coaching career. And one of those factors may be kind of institutional support or support from one's collegiate coach. And we do know that male coaches tend to have a more robust organizational or a more robust
network.
Yeah. So we do know that male coaches tend to have a more robust network within the coaching community than female coaches. There's been research on that. And that may be something that impacts female athletes who are interested in coaching. They may be benefiting from the network of their male coaches.
It just dawned on me, Matea, that I'm sort of connecting the dots here. I just finished writing a chapter that included a section on mentors, sponsors, and allies, and how those three are different. But thinking about female athletes coached by men who have more power in the system and have a greater network, and in basketball, the majority of head coaches of Division I are women. I think 60-65%. So men in that sport are less prominent, but that the men that are in the system probably have a lot of power to sponsor and or mentor and advocate for their young women to get into coaching. So that actually makes sense to me.
Yeah, I do think that that could be an important factor. As for the second question of why these women who were coached by women may be persisting in coaching longer, one of the things that I came up with was there's good research looking at, so one of the things that I came up with was this idea that these coaches may be acting as sort of a retroactive buffer. So they, while athletes are exposed to female coaches, they may be watching them model ways of coping with gender discrimination and other barriers that female athletes or female coaches are commonly experiencing. And that may be something that women down the line who did enter coaching are benefiting from those examples.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the other point you argued really well in the paper is that these women coaches were also modeling how to manage or balance work, family, conflict, or harmony, however you want to frame it. And that they show that women can have children and coach, that you can have a family and a career, and that again, that provides them active mentoring and social support to help the young women who want to coach do the same.
Yeah, I do think that the visibility of seeing women in coaching with families effectively managing that balance, I think that visibility can be really important. And it may not be something that impacts athletes right away. I think that athletes tend to be very laser focused when they're in their careers, but it might be something that, comes back into play down the road when coaches are facing their own challenges.
Yeah, I agree. So this paper was really novel in so many ways, not just methodologically, but it, you know, it was based on the social cognitive career theory. So for those of you theory nerds listening, you know, a good paper and a solid project is really grounded in theory. So then we can use that theory to help explain what we found, which is exactly what Matei and I have been talking about. And I think the fact that it tracks actual career behavior and rather than intentions is another really solid way that it contributed to what we know. And I'm not sure you mentioned the exact stat, Matea, but the women coached by women were 4 times as likely to still be coaching as the women coached by men. And that was statistically significant, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think the other thing that we haven't talked about yet, but I thought was really important from this study, was that it gave us one little baseline number of female athletes' interest in coaching. So we saw that nearly 40% of my athlete pool of these Division I collegiate basketball players entered coaching after college. Which I think just helps us counter that common narrative that we often encounter, that women aren't interested in coaching. It's clear that women are interested in coaching, and that, I mean, I think this number suggests that we're losing women along the way.
Yeah, the leaky pipeline. So they're interested, you know, nearly half, just under half go into coaching. And then they sort of trickle out, but the ones coached by women seem to be able to persist and maybe survive and thrive due to a variety of factors. And we certainly need more research to understand the supports that help women survive this sort of hostile landscape of collegiate coaching. So this study really paved the way for some future inquiry.
Yeah, I think that some future research could focus specifically on like the career trajectories of female coaches and perhaps look at early careers. I'm not sure whether, I can't remember if there's been specific research or if it's just something that we kind of commonly say, but I think that early coaches tend to face a lot of challenges and maybe haven't built up, you know, kind of their toolkit yet for how they face those challenges, and that we may lose a lot of female coaches in those early years.
Yeah, we don't really know that. I know in the Tucker Center, when we talk about this, we sort of say, you know, there's sort of one critical window, maybe between 1 and 3 years, and then there might be another critical window between 3 and 7, but we don't really know. We need to dig down and find that out. What are these critical windows where the pipeline gets more leaky? And then I think in the end of the paper, you also say that we don't know what the similar rates of entry into coaching of their male counterparts are. So we had 40% of our female athletes go into coaching, but is that rate similar or different than their male counterparts? I think we don't know that either. What is the biggest take home that you think people should have out of your paper?
Well, I think my two biggest takeaways, one we've already mentioned, that female athletes are definitely interested in coaching. I think that's funny because it wasn't really the central question of my paper. But when I saw that percentage, it just really brought home to me that this narrative that women are not interested in coaching is just so false. And we have to throw that out the window and start examining more deeply why athletes are or are not entering coaching, or why we're losing women early on in their coaching careers. And I think the other main takeaway is that female coaches really matter. While this paper didn't show that women who are coached by women are more likely to enter coaching, the fact that those women who are coached by women are more likely to persist in their careers really tells us that those women who they were coached by were very important factors in their lives and in their career decisions.
Yeah, I really love this paper for so many reasons, because it helps dispel false narratives about girls and women in sport in many ways. It's got a great design, solid methods, and really interesting findings that ran counter to what we thought we'd find. And I think the hallmark of any really good paper is that we often say in the Tucker Center is follow the data. What story does the data tell? And this data told us some stories that we weren't expecting, and which was also really interesting and maybe left us with more questions than answers, I think.
Yeah, I did come out of this paper with a lot of questions, and I do hope that there will be, you know, some future research that kind of builds on either this methodology or some of the questions that came out of these findings.
Me too. And now I know it won't be you doing this research, because tell the listeners what you're up to now and what's going to be happening soon.
Yeah, so I finished up my master's last year, and I've been spending
2019.
Yeah, I've been spending this year getting ready to start law school in the fall. So I'm really hoping to pursue a law degree that I can use to advocate for female athletes and female coaches in some way. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but I know that there's a ton of room in the sport community for lawyers who are educated and
passionate about this. Yeah, I mean, this is really important, and we're really proud that you're training in the Tucker Center with the Borton Fellow has really led you down a path of wanting to be an advocate for women and girls in sport. There's so many things happening in the system that are discriminatory and really depressing related to women in coaching. And we need more women like you who want to take up the torch and help fight for gender equity in the system. So we'll all look forward to seeing what happens in your career in another 2 to 3 years.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm really excited, and I'm super grateful for everything that I learned from you and through all the advocacy I was involved in with the Tucker Center, all the wonderful research. It's really led me on a pretty amazing trajectory. So thank you so much.
You're more than welcome, and it was my pleasure to have you on the Tucker Center Talks.
I'm Megan Kahn, host of the We Coach podcast. Every 2 weeks, I chat with female coaches, administrators, or industry experts from a variety of sports across the country. Be sure to tune in every other Thursday on your favorite podcast player for inspiring conversations. I'll see you there.
As we conclude this episode, as I've been talking with Matea Wasson, former Tucker Center research assistant and my graduate student in the Tucker Center, I'd love to hear from you. So you can always tweet us at Tucker Center or at WIS Sports, or to me directly at Dr. Sports Psych. Be sure to check out our website at tuckercenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook or Instagram. Now, the good news about Matea's paper, her award-winning paper that we talked about in this podcast, is that because it's award-winning, it's now open access. So you can go on the show notes below and click on the link and go directly to the paper and read it for yourself if that's your wheelhouse. So be sure to look for future episodes of the Tucker Center Talks, where you'll find a lot more conversations from the world of women's sport on WISC Sports. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. That's a wrap for episode 4 of Tucker Center Talks. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.